Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. Yes, I'm back. The show originally aired on the Premier Network on Saturday, September 29th, 2018. This is episode 1527. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 600 categories of business software. Visit capterra.com/techguy and get your free copy of the Big Book of Free Software. Well, hello there. How are you? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. It's tech time. Phone number here, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call, but you have to use Skype or, you know, something like that. 888-827-5536. Easier to remember. 8888-ASK-LEO, right? Website? Yes, there's a website. What kind of tech guy would I be without a website? Frankly, I have too many websites, but the one for the show is the most important one. TechGuyLabs.com. And everything we talk about, everything you hear on the radio today, will appear there in short order. And furthermore, audio and video of the show after the fact, and even your comments and suggestions. So as I have said many times, no need to yell at me. I can't hear you anyway. You just yelling at the radio is an exercise in futility. Instead, go to TechGuyLabs.com and add your thoughts and your comments. Say, Leo, you're wrong. Or, I've got a better idea. That's fine, too. We want to make this. It's a free site. It's open. There's no sign up. And we'll make this a place people can go and get answers. That's all I can. That's the main. It's not important if I'm wrong. It's important that we get the right answer eventually, and especially on that website, which will live forever. TechGuyLabs.com. There is a chat room, and you'll find a link to that chat room at the website, TechGuyLabs.com. That chat room is a great place to go and hang with other people listening to the show, mostly live, some less than, but no, mostly listening to the show as it happens. And so that's another place to get additional comments. And actually, the chat room is useful to me, too. I watch it throughout the show to get help. If help should be needed, help will be provided in irc.twit.tv. That's the chat room. Now, thanks first of all to Rich DeMuro, who did such a bang-up job the last 2 weeks. I've been on vacation. Rich is the tech guy at KTLA in Los Angeles, and I know you love having him on. Don't love it too much, if you don't mind. Or if you do, it's okay, but keep it to yourself. Thank you. I love it that Rich is here to do that. Makes it much easier for me to take some time off. And I had a lovely trip. Before I left, I realized a couple of things. First of all, that Apple, they hadn't sent out the invites, but I thought it fairly likely that Apple would have an event while I was gone. They did. There was some question before I left, we even talked about this, whether that event would feature iPhones and other things. But no, in fact, it was just iPhones. So I think there must be another event coming. We know there's going to be iPads coming out in the fall. We've seen proof in iOS 12.1 in the beta that they sent out to people
By the way, the mic is on mute. Unmute it. Press the button on the back of Google
Home.
Okay,
that does it, Google Home. I'm unplugging you forever. There. Now she'll be silent. Unless she's figured out a way to operate without electricity. What was I saying? They had an event, but they didn't mention the iPads. And in the iOS 12.1 software code, there's reference to a fall 2018 iPad. So we're pretty convinced Apple will announce new iPads probably in October, probably in a few weeks, right? They probably or maybe or I hope will announce maybe new Macintosh computers too, possibly. One thing they didn't announce, they didn't even mention at the event was their wireless charging pad. which they announced a year ago, and still, and not only did they not say, oh, yeah, we're working on it, or it'll be out soon, or maybe next. No, nothing. Silence. The good news is you don't need Apple's wireless charging pad. There's a million other companies that make them. Perfectly good wireless charging pads. And I've been using, you know, several. I have one, a fast charger from Samsung that works perfectly well with the new iPhones. I have one from a company called, this is Tilt, T-Y-L-T. Belkin makes them. 100 companies make them. All right, not a million. 100 companies make them. Plenty of places if you want wireless charging to get it. Let me mention the new iPhones a little bit. I have a couple of them. iPhone... Oh, this is going to be hard for me to do. You'll forgive me if I don't get it right. 10S. One's a Roman numeral, one's a letter. Sure, they both look like letters, but one's... Don't forget, the X is 10, the S is S. I have a 10S, and I have a 10S Max. And I've been using... I got the 10S Max about a week ago, and I've been using it all that time, and I really like it. Notably faster. As I have said in the past, if you bought a new iPhone last year, probably no reason to upgrade whatsoever. But if you have an older iPhone, this would be a worthy upgrade. I like the Max. I like the size. Don't expect a lot more stuff on the screen. It's still six rows of icons and a dock. Most apps, things are just bigger. On Safari, you see a few more lines of text on a website. It's more, I think, actually... Apple is more, in a way, acknowledging that there are those of us buying iPhones who are over 20 who like a little bit something a little bigger on the screen. I'm also told that the other reason for this is that the Chinese market, which has become very important to Apple, really likes, buys iPhones essentially as a status symbol. Again, I'm told this. I'm not in China. I don't know. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But the bigger the phone, the better. The other reason that we think this might be the case is because Apple released a gold version, and gold, as we know, a very popular color in China, for phones especially. And they're making a dual SIM version. The SIM is that is your phone's brain, the person, not brain, brain's not the right word. It's more its heart, its personality. It's a thing that says this phone has this phone number on this network. And in China and India and other countries, it's very common to have multiple SIMs because you go a block. You may be on a different carrier. And so it's very common to have two carriers in one phone and choose. You can even say, I want data to come from this guy and phone calls to go through that guy. So Apple, for the first time ever, has built that into the new iPhone if you buy it in certain regions. And that, again, is for the Chinese market, I think. Why am I mentioning this? I don't know, because we're not in China, are we? But just, I don't know. It's interesting. It's more evidence of Apple's plans in the world. I like this phone. I think it's a very nice phone. Wouldn't recommend against it, with one little footnote, one little asterisk. This month, or October, I guess, in a couple of weeks, at some point, a third iPhone is going to come out, the XR. I'm sorry. See, I did it. I know I did it. The 10R. The 10R is everything that's in the 10S minus two little things. The screen is an LCD screen, much like all previous iPhones before the iPhone 10. And it's a very good LCD screen. Apple was a great pain to say, this is a good screen. Very nice. Oh, it's a good screen. And its camera has a single lens instead of a dual lens. I don't think that's a big deal, but some might. They have to make some distinction. It'll be less expensive. That's the good news. And I think for a lot of people who are looking for a new iPhone and kind of choke, I spent $1,250 on this XS Max. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. So for those who say that's ridiculous, here's the good news. The 10R will be significantly less expensive. I think $750 instead of $1,000, something like that. So that sounds like that might be one to wait for. That would be my only recommendation. If you decided I might need a new iPhone, but you haven't yet chosen, and I'll get a 10R as soon as they come out. And they come in colors. Oh, isn't that pretty? 8888 Ask Leo. There's lots to talk about. I have a lot of catching up to do. What happened while I was gone? You can help me. Give me a ring. Let's talk. 888-827-5536. All right, I'm exhausted. I have to build my stamina, my talking stamina back up. I'm going to take a little break, get some coffee, and we will take your calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Michael Cozio, musical director. Gabe Kaplan, Miss Takata, the worst actor ever on national television. But it was, I guess it was his shtick, right? Wasn't he terrible? Leo, I'm sorry, Gabe. You're a great comic, though. Funny guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am back. Thank you again. Thanks again to Rich DeMuro for filling in for me. Did anything happen while I was gone? I don't know. You know, probably I should ask the wonderful Kim Schaffer, who's been here all this time. Hello, Kim.
I've been here, and I'm impressed you got that from the very first note.
Welcome back. I play a game. I don't know if you've noticed, but I do play a little bit of a game with Michael's
yes,
music.
Yes, you do.
I try to identify it.
You're very good.
In the first note or two.
But us radio people usually are.
It's years wasted as a DJ that really did me in.
Yeah.
So,
did anything happen?
What happened? Anything?
Oh, I've had complete tech meltdowns, but
well, that's normal.
Yeah, that's normal.
That's nothing new.
Yeah.
Everybody does that.
You know, drop the phone in the ocean, MacBook Pro display going wrong. Everything's gone wrong. But
I did not drop anything in the ocean, even though I was on the ocean for 3 whole weeks. Nothing fell in the ocean.
But then, yeah, the new phones came out, so
yeah.
I guess.
Did you get a new phone?
I didn't, but I'm probably going to have to. You know, I took my phone to this thing at Staples, and I have to give them a little, not a plug, but I think it's called Tech Dry. There's a little machine, and you put it in.
It's full of rice.
It's not rice, but it's like little ball bearing kind of things, yeah. It looks like. Anyway, you put it in for half an hour, and it revived the phone. Half of my phone screen is black-ish.
Well, that's
you
the
can
only...
tell, but the rest of it's working. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess
that's the only risk to getting a phone wet. If you could, and you can't in the modern phones, pull the battery immediately.
Right.
Like, kill all the power. Then the chances are, you know, if you give it a good drying, you could probably use it again. The issue is short circuits while it's wet,
mm-hmm.
Especially if it's seawater.
And it was seawater, yeah. But I went right across the street to the little expensive market and bought a bag of rice and put it in because I had a 45-minute drive.
Shut it off if you can. You know, the idea is if you can get the power out of it, the less likely to have a short circuit. But what happened is, your screen.
Yeah. The screen's a little messed up. And first off, the toggle was not working, but I think there was like a grain of sand or something in there. It's come out. So
may I ask,
think it may last.
What were you doing when you dropped?
I was walking looking for sand dollars. I was just like, it was a night. I'm going, this is might be my last chance to go to the beach this summer. And and it fell right out of my pocket. And that was.
Was it an iPhone?
This is an iPhone 6S Plus.
Isn't it supposed to be somewhat waterproof?
Well, no, the 7 started.
Oh, 6
is the 6S
weren't.
Plus is not. So, and I should have also drowned it in fresh water, which I didn't do. So,
I made a few mistakes. Is that what they said?
I had a lot of people giving me recommendations. And, you know, somebody was good and they told me to take it to the Staples and it did revive
they
it.
Have
but
a
enough of my
machine.
Problems.
Do not, by the way, put it in the microwave oven.
Somebody told me to do that. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure somebody
did. You're ridiculous.
Did.
But they were just being wiseacres, as you like to call them.
That will explode it.
But we can stay on the iPhone subject because Nick in Redlands is having problems with his brand new iPhone's facial recognition. I don't know. It might be a beard getting in the way. Who
beards.
Knows? Yes, Staples Tech Dry. That's it. Scooter X. Thank you.
Staples Tech. They even have a trademark. Wow.
Oh, did you look it up?
Yeah. Scooter X found the link.
It worked enough. I mean, I don't know how much longer it's going to last, but it turned
back on. For the foreseeable future, Scooter X, who is our chat room, one of our chat room moderators, has decided to call himself Scooter 10 to avoid all confusion. Hello, Nick in the Redlands. How are you today, sir?
Good, good. How are you?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
Oh, great. Thank you. Great show. So we updated, me and my wife, from the 6S, 6X Plus to the 10S. We bought two brand new phones. We loved them. Beautiful phones.
Yes, they are pretty, aren't they?
Yeah. One disappointment that you can migrate the text messages from one phone to the other. So you kind of lose all the text ones.
You actually can, but you have to turn on. There's a setting called for messages. I think it's iCloud messages or something like that will save the messages in the iCloud. And it's easy to do it on a Macintosh. I'm not sure exactly how you would do it on an iPhone, but the messages are local only to the phone unless you've turned that on. Let me see. I'm looking and see if there's a see, there's not a setting. Maybe it's an iCloud. It probably is an iCloud. On the phone to turn on, store those. Then what that does is it stores the messages on iCloud as well as your phone. And then when you get a new phone, they'll all be copied over. It might be just something for next time. Remember for next time, or turn it on now. And that way, when you get a new phone, but you said, Kim said you were having problems with the face recognition.
Oh yes. So the, my wife set up her phone, with her face ID, and the next thing we look at, my daughter looked at the phone and opened up.
Oh, yeah. So, does your daughter look a lot like your wife?
No.
So, I've heard of this happening. Certainly, and Apple has said this, it happens with twins, but I have heard of this happening with members of the same family. So there's a few things you can do to, you can't stop that, but you can train it more. And there is, if you look in the Face ID section, there is a option to kind of, what do they call it, set up an alternate appearance. That's not your daughter. That's you. That's your wife. That sometimes I think people saw this set up an alternate appearance and said, oh, good, I can have two people log into my phone. But no, the idea is it will like if you wear glasses, for instance, I would use it for wearing with and without glasses. But it has the advantage of perhaps learning your wife's face better. And in theory, the Face ID gets better by itself. So maybe as time goes by and it gets used to your wife, it'll be less likely to unlock for your daughter. But that's something Apple mentioned. And I honestly miss Touch ID, because Touch ID, the fingerprint reader, was fast. It was easy.
Correct.
And it didn't have these problems. And when Apple announced Face ID last year with the iPhone X, they said, oh, yeah, but Touch ID is so unreliable. All of a sudden, it's less secure than Face ID. And Face ID, there's only one in a million chance to be a duplicate. And Touch ID, there's one in 100,000 or something. But honestly, this is a problem because you know if your wife doesn't want your daughter looking at her phone.
Exactly. So we talked to tech support many times, and then we got up to the engineering department. And finally, this morning, they called me back and they said, we suggest that you take the phone back and get another phone.
No, that's, well, because, I mean, you could do it, but that's just to make you happy. I presume the first thing you did is unpaired, turned off the Face ID, turned it back on.
We did.
And re-recognized it. It's still doing that. Yeah.
Still doing it.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's something wrong with the phones. You know, since Apple said do it, go ahead and do it. It's a little bit of a pain, right? You have to copy everything off and so forth. Maybe there's something wrong with it. But also, I think this is a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bump, dab, bump. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so happy. One of the perks of my return from vacation is to get to talk to this fellow right here, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. We love Scott. Appears every week on the show to talk about AV, whether it's speakers, TVs, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo, welcome back.
Thank you. I trust all went well while I was gone. Rich, it was nice to you and everything. And,
oh, yeah, Rich good. Was fine. He did a great job.
Oh, good.
And it was fun talking with him. I hope to get together with him down here sometime.
Yeah, he's in your neighborhood.
Since we're both in L.A. Yeah,
down in L.A. We've known Rich since he used to work at CNET way back when. Way back when, yeah. He's a great guy. So, you said you wanted to talk every year. Tell me about this flat panel shootout, because this is the big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal. Every year for, I don't know, the last 15 years, roughly, I don't remember the exact number, but it's close to that. A retailer in Scarsdale, New York, Value Electronics, puts on a big flat panel shootout, they call it. Basically, they put the top level, and they're only looking at the top tier flagship models from the companies that have TVs available at that time. They put the flagship models from LG, Sony, Samsung, and so on next to each other. They calibrate them very carefully, make sure they're all on this level playing field, and then they invite people in, both experts from the industry and enthusiasts, to come into the store, and they evaluate these TVs and give them scores on a variety of category, you know, of performance criteria. And then they determine the king of TV, that is, which one is the best. And so this year they had four TVs in contention, the LG 65E8 OLED, which lists for about $3,500, the Sony XBR A9F, which is their latest OLED, that lists for about $4,500. These are all 65-inch TVs, by the way. Sony also has their top-of-the-line LCD, LED backlit TV called the Z9F, and that's also about $4,500. And then they also had the top-of-the-line Samsung, the Q9FN, which is a quantum dot illuminated LCD TV. And that apparently the price has been reduced to $3,000. So that's quite good, really. So they put these four TVs up next to each other. They brought in a very well-known trusted calibrator, Dave Abrams, to calibrate them all. Robert Zone, the owner of Value Electronics, also rented two Sony X300 OLED professional monitors.
So this is a good point to make.
Yes.
Because, you know, most of the time when people buy these TVs, they're not getting them professionally calibrated.
Correct.
So I almost would like, it gives us a chance to see which TVs are capable of the best image.
Correct.
In the best circumstances. But it isn't necessarily how it will be for you.
Correct.
But does it make sense, though, that the TV that looks good best calibrated will look best uncalibrated, or no?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, certainly, as I've said on this show many times, if you go into your TV, you buy a new TV, you bring it home, you set it, put it on the wall or whatever, the first thing you do is you go into the picture menu and you select a picture mode called movie or cinema. And that's going to get you pretty close. How close? Well, that you read the reviews and you find out, hopefully, you know, which one in its cinema mode with no other adjustments gets you closer to the ideal. And the ideal is the reference monitor that the colorist or the people who made the content were looking at when they made the content. And so that's why Robert put two of these monitors, which by themselves, 30-inch monitors cost $45,000 a piece.
But this is what the color graders use in the...
This is what the color graders use, exactly. Yeah. So he very smartly put two of these also in view. So you could compare each of the TVs with what the colorist sees. Oh, yeah. Must have been hilarious. Must have been just great.
I don't think he's done that before, has he?
No, he has.
Oh, he has. He always does this. Okay. Okay.
Well, he has in the last few years anyway.
Okay. Okay.
So there we have it. We have two OLEDs and two LCD TVs. All 65-inch, all calibrated.
All top of the line.
All top of the line, all flagship. And then they do basically two rounds of judging. One round is by a panel of experts. So calibrators, TV reviewers, electrical engineers. Bill Schindler was there. He used to be a VP at Panasonic. Wow. And so they grade these TVs. And then the enthusiast crowd, the non-professional crowd, grades the TVs as well. And then they tally up the scores and come up with winners. And so and they also judge on three – basically, they give three different scoring rounds. One is best living room TV. So that is, in your case, what you mentioned earlier, sort of, you know, you're not necessarily in ideal conditions.
Yeah.
Right? So if you put a TV in your living room, you might not be able to close the curtains.
Yeah.
Might have to have the lights on. And this is standard dynamic range, because most content that you get from broadcast or cable or satellite or whatever is going to be standard dynamic range. Then they grade them as which one is the best home theater TV. So that's standard dynamic range in a reference environment where you can turn out all the lights. And finally, best HDR TV, high dynamic range. Which one does the best with high dynamic range content, which is becoming more and more important? And I think is an important thing to do. But I like the fact that they judge these TVs of, okay, what, how do they look with the lights on? How do they look with the lights off? And how do they look in high dynamic range? And interestingly, then, the best living room TV, interestingly, was the Sony OLED. And it was also the best home theater TV, standard dynamic range in a reference environment. As in terms of HDR, high dynamic range, it was a tie between the Sony and LG OLEDs. So even though the OLEDs are not as bright, the Sony LCD and the Samsung LCD are both much, much brighter than the OLEDs. The OLEDs won all three categories, and the Sony OLED was crowned king of TV 2018.
I find this fascinating because really the only thing keeping LCDs in our recommendations was is you know for brightly lit rooms.
That's correct.
And price, of course.
Yeah. But LCDs are generally a little less expensive.
It sounds
than OLEDs.
Like OLEDs are not a compromise anymore. Anyway.
No.
Yeah. You can afford them.
You know, again, if you're in a bright environment, then probably an LCD is a better choice. But they don't get as good blacks.
Right.
And OLED, that's where they're
so
they
even
really
shine. HDR in a less light controlled situation, even then looks better.
They don't seem to have looked at HDR in a ambient light situation.
Right.
It was only in a reference situation, okay. Which you really need because if you're in a brightly lit situation, your dynamic range of your vision is compromised.
Wow.
And so it doesn't, you know, you can't really see the advantage of HDR as well in a brightly lit room as you can in a dark room.
Right.
Plus the fact that, you know, in a dark room, LCDs can get hella bright. And be hurtful, be painful to your eyes.
Yes.
That's why I prefer watching an OLED. That and the lower black levels. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you have it. Sounds like the Sony is the king of the hill for the first time time, right? I mean,
I think LG's has been
won
the
every year for the last few years. I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So Sony beat them out this time.
Tell me the model number.
A9F.
Sony, and do they still call it XBR or what are they?
Yeah, XBR-65A9F.
A9F. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. Scott at twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you're going to be here next week.
Next week, yeah.
Fun.
And I'll be, in fact, in studio for this segment.
Oh, good.
So
how fun. You know,
it'll be great fun.
That's this coming Saturday.
Yep.
Good. I'll let John know. We'll set up a microphone. Great.
Cool.
Otherwise, you have to sit on the ball with me, which is kind of not. It's a little
too
intimate.
That'd get a little crowded there. And then after the show, I'm co-hosting Screensavers.
Screensavers. I knew that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the laser TV, the new one. They're installing a new one
on
Thursday.
Yeah, the new dual laser.
The dual laser.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that.
I wish you could see the old one first.
I do, too. If I get there early enough, maybe I'll get a quick chance to look at it.
Yeah,
I'm coming in on Thursday. So
good. Well, we'll do an extended Scott segment next week then on the radio show since you're here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good.
Sounds great.
Good. All right,
On Screensavers, we're also going to talk about Dolby Atmos and the new Vizio soundbars that have Dolby Atmos.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Fun. We can simulate it in here. I'll shout at the top of the room. All right, Scott.
Yep.
Thanks so much.
Sure. You want me to stick around?
Oh. Wait a minute. So you'll do a segment now? Is that what happens?
Yes. The interstitials.
Interstitials. I forgot all about it. Yes. Let me hear.
You've been gone a while.
It's all yours, my friend. And I'll set up your special camera in just a sec here.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't even remember where you were. Where did you go this time?
The Western Mediterranean. It was amazing. The Western Mediterranean.
Oh, that's right. You were going to bring some limoncello, huh?
Yeah, lots of limoncello.
Good.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. It was just beautiful. Beautiful.
Amazing.
The weather was perfect. And yeah, it was a very nice trip. We were very hard-pressed to come back.
Yes.
I can tell you.
Anyway, let me just say hi to everybody in the chat room. Nice to see you all again. UJ asked if there was any bias lighting utilized. That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I'm going to have to investigate that because that is a super good question.
Yeah, we're all about bias lighting these days, aren't we?
Yeah, really. Yeah. I certainly am.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the report from Display Daily. Ken Werner did an excellent report from the event. He talks about some of the tests that they looked at, but there was... I don't see any mention of bias lighting. That's a super good question. So I'll have to check that out. Emily the Strange, how you doing? Did you happen to see the movie Star Wars Solo on your home theater? No, I haven't yet. I was not a big fan of Star Wars Solo. Solo, rather, A Star Wars Story is actually the title of it. I saw it in the theater, of course. I saw it in Dolby Vision. And the Dolby Vision high dynamic range, as I recall, was not very good. So I have not been, you know, particularly excited. Oh, I got to see it in my home theater. So I'm not quite so sure about that. I guess I'll probably check it out, but it wasn't a high priority for me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. The phone number, 888-827-5536. If you want to talk high tech. A lot of stuff happened while I was gone. Mojave, the new version of Macintosh OS 10, came out. We could talk a little bit about that. iOS 12, big improvement. I have to say the iPhone XS, and I have the XS Max, noticeably faster. And we were mentioning Face ID. It's much better. Also got the new Apple Watch, the 44-millimeter Apple Watch. And that's also much improved, not just in speed, but in... heart rate, for instance, doesn't seem to lose track as often as it did. Really a nice new device. So, anything around those lines, I try to get all the new stuff when it comes out. We know we're about 2 weeks away from a little less from a Google event. A week from, I guess it's a week from Tuesday. Google will announce, we think, its new Pixel 3 phone. That'll be interesting, too. I'm a fan. I brought both the Pixel 2 XL and the iPhone 10 on my trip and took a lot of pictures. You know, remember, I don't know if I mentioned it a couple of times, but you may remember I was doing a little experiment. Our photography guy, Chris Marquardt, suggested that I only bring one camera and one lens. You know, normally I have a fairly hefty kit that I carry with me on my vacations because I'm not very good, but avid amateur photographer. And so I like to, you know, have all my tools at my disposal. So I brought a little tiny toolkit this time. 50-millimeter lens, manual focus even. I think I got some very good images, which I'll slowly put up on my blog at leolaporte.com. But and also at my Smug Mug site, leo.camera. But I have to say there were a few times when I said, I just can't get what I want with this 50-millimeter lens. Let me use the much more wide-angle lens on the iPhone or the Google Pixel phone. And we are at the point now with camera phones where the cameras in these are so good. I'm tempted next time just to bring a camera phone. What? They're really good. And some of my favorite pictures from our trip are not from an expensive SLR. They're from a camera phone, and I expect even better from the new iPhone XS. Many have said, and so far, you know, I haven't taken a lot of pictures, but so far it does look like it's slightly better. I mean, the 10 was very good, but then there's going to be the new Pixel phone, and the Pixel phones have all along been the leaders. The Pixel 2 is easily the best camera phone. In fact, a number of people pointed out that the Pixel 2 camera still is better than the latest iPhone XS camera. Although they're doing something of the same thing. It's kind of interesting. Their iPhone XS and the Pixel 2 take 5 images every time you press the button once. Boom, 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 almost instantaneously. It's essentially like they're shooting a movie. And then they merge the 5 images into one, which gives them, you've heard, we were just talking about with Scott, this high dynamic range capability, which means that, you know, the problem has always been that cameras have a certain number of stops that they can see from the brightest to the darkest. I've forgotten the number. It's 7, 8, 9, something like that. Stops from the brightest to the darkest. But the human eye, partly because of the magic of the brain and the ability of the pupils to dilate, can see a broader dynamic range. That's why when you're at a sunset on the beach, you can see the sunset, the sky, but you can also see the darkened beach. Truth is, your brain's playing a little trick on you because your pupil dilates when you look down at the darker thing, and then or vice versa. It dilates when you're looking at the brighter thing, and opens up when you're looking at the darker thing. And it does it so imperceptibly and so quickly. It feels as if you can see both the dark and the light. But the camera doesn't do that. And so people are often disappointed with things like sunset pictures because they either can see the beach or they can see the sunset. They can't see both, for example. So high dynamic range is a trick cameras can pull to give you both, to mix multiple images together. And that's one of the things these new iPhone XS's are doing. It's one of the things that Pixel 2 has done. It also can give you better image quality through some fairly heavy computational tricks. So it'll be interesting to see what Google does a week from Tuesday when they announce the Pixel 3. I expect an even better camera phone. And then it really is going to be, you know, a question. It's killing the point-and-shoot camera market, I might add. There's still a professional camera market, but it's killing the point-and-shoot market. Murray in New Jersey. He's next. Hello, Murray.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's great to have you back.
It's good to be back.
And I want to thank you first. The last time I called a few months ago, you helped me. Well, not necessarily you individually, but the whole group that you have with the chat room and everything solved my problem. I had a handshake issue with an Apple 4K TV and a Sony.
I remember that. Yeah, and so they were able to. What was the final result? How did you solve it?
Well, I guess someone suggested just to take it out of sleep mode so the Apple TV never went to sleep.
Ah, by sleeping. Yes, that's been a problem for me too. I remember your call. I'll try it at home, too. Yeah, because when it goes to sleep, the handshake goes away, and then it can't wake up properly.
So that's all the problem.
Perfect. I'll do that at home. Thank you.
Now I have another problem.
Okay.
So I'm laughing because Sony, I'm sure the people at Sony are really happy to hear Scott's report.
Yeah.
They're not going to be so happy after I'm done.
Uh-oh.
So I have a Sony... it's a X930D.
Okay.
And it's a 4K HDR. It's only a little under 2 years old. Of course, it's out of warranty. And all of a sudden, it gets a horizontal line across the entire bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
It's always there. And then some of the times, most of the time, the whole picture is like a double picture.
Oy, yay, yay. But then you turn it off and it goes away, or?
Well, no, it's always there.
It never goes away.
Well, yeah. Well, if I turn the power off, it goes away.
Okay, so you can power it down, turn it back on, and it's normal.
No, it's always, when I power it, when I turn it off.
When it's turned off, it looks fine. A blank screen.
Exactly.
Scott's still here. Scott Wilkinson, it sounds like he's got a hardware failure on that thing, huh?
And yeah, it does.
You know, it does it no matter what. Oh, I'm glad Scott's still there. I was hoping I'd be lucky.
Yeah, you know, this is not unusual on a LCD screen because of the way LCDs work. You can have a part of the screen stop working.
Yeah, now is it a solid color or a solid black or white?
It's a solid white. And what's interesting is if there's an image above, it's almost like it's bleeding down below. Like if it's completely black above, I don't see the line.
Sounds like those LCDs are stuck open, right, Scott?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And or it could also be something with the backlight, which in the case of the 930 is actually an edge light. So the lights, I believe, on the 930, I don't remember, I'm not 100% sure, but I think they're on the sides. And so what I'm thinking is there might be a problem with the LEDs on the sides at the bottom of the screen, causing some
bottom line though.
It's broken.
Yeah. How do you fix it? I mean, these screens are pretty hard to fix, I think, because
they are.
They're all one piece. I mean, you should call Sony and see, but I bet you it costs nearly as much as buying a new TV, basically.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
It's a X930. What did you say? D?
It's a X930D.
D as in dog?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's,
does that help?
That's 2 years. Well, it's less than 2 years old.
Yeah. Well, maybe then you can get a warranty fix because that yeah. shouldn't happen. Yeah. Leo Agreed. Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. That's too bad. Yeah, it sounds like, did something hit it? So that's what Sony's going to say is, there was an impact. It's not under warranty.
Well, I already called Sony. They looked it up and they said it's out of a warranty and they didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
My real question at this point to you is what should I do with it? I already went out last night and bought a Vizio.
Oh, good.
That's probably a better TV.
It probably is. That's right. And for a lot less money.
And it's backlit. It's fall backlighting rather than edge lighting. I never did recommend the 930 because of that reason. I have never heard of one failing in that particular way.
But that's very typical of how LCDs fail.
Yeah, it's
so those
true.
Shutters are open, and the mirroring you're getting
open,
is yeah, they're stuck open. The mirroring you're getting is from bleeding down from the ones that are still working.
Yep.
In through the stuck open LCDs. Now it could be. Yeah, if you really wanted to fiddle with it, you could massage the screen or somehow try to. But it's all the way across, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that means probably those lines that control those cells
right.
are shot.
Right. Yep.
I don't know if they have a separate, amplifier for them or circuitry for them. I'm not sure how that works, but.
Well, yeah, each row and column of pixels is controlled separately.
Yeah.
Where do you live? You in the LA area?
New Jersey.
Well, okay, well, there might very well be a TV repair place that would it might be less expensive to fix than replace, but maybe not.
Sony's always going to, just like Apple or anybody else, give you the panel replacement cost.
Right.
And that's not, sometimes there's a fix. Like the guy looks and says, oh, well, you see what happened here. we could solder that thing back in. It'll be fine.
If it were a power supply problem, then yeah, that's probably worth fixing.
Well, I'm
this
guessing
like
the
a
fact
panel
that
problem.
Yeah, but I'm guessing that since a chunk went out, that there may be a separate somethings controlling these chunks and
what are
maybe
called driver circuits.
Yeah, like a driver that maybe that driver circuit got unplugged, maybe it just fell out, and the guy opens it up and goes, oh well, I see your problem right here, plugs it back in,
and it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth.
It's possible.
Yeah,
it's worth investigating.
What you don't want to do is replace the panel. Your Vizio is less than the cost of panel replacement on that TV.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah.
Which Vizio did you get? Just out of curiosity.
I think it was the P series.
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, those are great and cheap.
Yeah,
cheap.
Great and cheap. Can you imagine that?
Amazing. Murray, I'm going to let you go, Murray. Thank you. Because I want to go get a cup of coffee for National Coffee Day.
Oh, is today National Coffee
Day? I've just been informed. And I'm going to go get a cup of coffee, and you get to take control.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, everybody. Nice to be here with you. Moo has been asking about TVs. He doesn't really like Sony or Samsung, much prefers LG and Panasonic, and doesn't trust Sony or Samsung. And that last call might be evidence, certainly anecdotal evidence to support not trusting Sony. I will tell you this, though. I have a Sony, first generation Sony OLED. It's been flawless, hasn't been a problem at all. So there's another piece of anecdotal evidence. You got to remember, this is all anecdotal. Anyway, he's asking about entry-level 4K Panasonic or LG TVs. Now, I don't know where you live, but Panasonic does not sell TVs in the U.S. anymore, only in Europe and possibly in Asia. I don't know that for sure, but I do know they sell them in Europe. I think Asia as well, but not in the U.S. So those of us who live in the U.S., we can't get Panasonic TVs. Now, Panasonic OLED TVs have been sold in Europe and possibly Asia for a few years now, and they're very highly regarded. So there's interesting. There's another shootout, flat panel shootout, and I really don't like that word either. Face off, I would prefer to call it, in England. HDTV Test, I believe, is the website that does that. And they always have a Panasonic OLED in the mix, and it usually wins. So, unfortunately, if you're in the U.S., you won't be able to find a Panasonic, but you will be able to find an LG. Now, he says he wants a 42-inch display, so that's not going to be an OLED. Smallest OLEDs are 55 inches, and that's certainly what I would recommend if you can. If you can go large enough to get a 55, an LG OLED is the TV I certainly recommend. And the B series, I'm going to look that up here real quick. Well, I would start with the C series, and you're probably talking about under $3,000. That's still a lot of money, I know. I'm going to see if I can find out what the price is on an LG C8 price. Let's see what it says. So let's see. We're talking a C7. Okay, so C8. Yeah, we're in the close to the $3,000 range. So it ain't cheap, but it is superb. So at 42-inch, you're looking at an LCD TV. I generally don't like LG LCD TVs. Sorry. I would say get a Vizio, because even at 42 inches, it's what's called FALD, full array local dimming. The LED illuminator devices are actually behind the screen. We were talking before about the Sony X930, where the LEDs are around the edge. That's called edge lighting, as opposed to full array local dimming backlighting, or FALD backlighting. And I always prefer FALD over edge lighting. And the LGs, except possibly the super top of the line flagship LG LCD TVs, are all edge lit, as I recall. Therefore, I do not recommend getting them. Vizio certainly makes 42 inchers. All of their TVs, every single one, is FALD. I guess the very lowest end don't have local dimming, but they still have full array backlighting. But I don't remember whether the P series has a 42 inch, goes down to 42 inches or not. Marsworm here, getting back to his question about the TV repair. Best Buy has a TV repair program, so you might check that out. Let's see. Kay Lou is saying, my friend has a 77-inch Sony that started getting black dots that look like sand grains. Ooh, after a year. Wow. He was distraught, but Kay Lou found a firmware update that fixed it. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I don't think I'd ever heard that before. Maybe it was a 75-inch. And was it an OLED, or it was probably an LCD? Getting back to Moo here. Reasonably priced 4K, 42 to 50-inch TV, not Samsung or Sony. So LG or Panasonic. I would say Vizio, really, for reasonably priced, unless you're in Europe. Then maybe you can get a Panasonic. I sound almost like a broken record about Vizio, but you know, for the money, it's really the best value out there. Anyway, I've only got about 30 seconds left, so thanks everybody. I look forward to seeing you all next week from Twit.
Yay! We'll see you then, Scott. Well, there's that magic music. I miss that music, which once again, every weekend on the cruise, I would hop out of bed and Lisa would play the theme song and I'd take a few calls. It was 8888 Ask Leah. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. The website, techguylabs.com. And you know the rigmarole. Let's go to line three. Poor Olga in Prescott's been hanging on. You're very patient. Thank you, Olga.
Hi.
Hi. What can I do for
you? Welcome back.
Thank you.
So I want to know if you think the Echo Look is something blind person can eat. No.
Oh, no. It's really, that's a good question, isn't it? That makes sense. It's a Echo, Amazon Echo, with a camera in it. And it's got, you know, the A word, the lady inside that you can talk to. And she's a full version of Echo. So I think Echo in general for blind people is a great, is a really great tool. I know I've talked to many of blind people who like it. The problem with the Look is, as far as I know, unless somebody's hacked it, it only does, the camera only is useful for one thing, your outfit.
So, well, yeah, but see, but that's what I'm looking for is if I could, if it's something that would be easy enough to take a picture with for someone.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let me tell you what happens, because I've had one. I don't have it anymore because I'm such a fashion plate, I don't need it. No, it's silly for me, but I actually gave it to a friend of mine who was really excited about it. She wanted some. So the idea is it's really to help you make fashion choices. So you get in front of it. It's not very big. It's just a little thing. Put it in your closet. That's the theory. You get in front of it, and you can actually say, Echo, take a picture. You don't have to touch anything or do anything. And then it takes a picture and sends it off to the Amazon servers. Where it does, and I don't know how this would work for you, the response is then on the Echo Look app. There's a special app for it, which will then, it takes about 5 minutes, you can do a few things with it. You can say, compare this look to yesterday's look or to another look. You can actually have two, you know, put on two different outfits and say, which should I wear?
Right.
And then Amazon's apparently, it's kind of unclear, but apparently using humans and machine learning to recommend outfits. I tested it and I found it to be, I don't know. The problem is it might not be your taste. It's somebody's taste. But it might not be your taste.
I guess, you know, being blind, you kind of want to match.
You don't want to put on purple and green and go out the door. I understand that. What do you do now? Do you put tags on the clothes?
Well, no, actually, there's a talking color reader.
Oh, perfect.
That I use. And so, you know, so I can use that. But I just thought, well, this would be really great if it really works well.
Yeah, but what it doesn't do is go, oh, dear, you've just combined chartreuse and red. Okay. It doesn't, it's not that, it's, and then you, the response you get back is a rating, and it's not a verbal rating, it's a visual rating on the Echo Look app.
I see.
It's not,
would that be on the iPhone then? Would it, the app appear on the iPhone?
Yeah. And so you have you have screen reading, I know, on the iPhone, but
right.
I don't know how accessible their app is. My guess is it didn't look that accessible, and it didn't look that useful because, you know, initially I thought it'd be really cool because it'd be almost like having a stylist, right?
Yeah, right.
And it would say, oh, you know that, you got that white, beautiful white blouse that looks so good with that plaid skirt and those patent leather. You could tell I'm a preppy, right? Those patent leather loafers would look so cute together. It would be nice if it did something like that, but it doesn't really seem to. In fact, it really feels a little bit like an experiment designed mostly to gather information about what you're wearing so they can, on your Amazon page, recommend other stuff.
I see. Okay.
I think that's the real goal. Wouldn't it be great if somebody made that an accessibility tool? It would be so cool.
Well, that would be really, it would be very cool. I mean, I know kind of what colors match with what, and so the color reader is really helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at the same time, something like this, if it really worked well.
Do you ever get to work and somebody says, oh, dear, pulls you aside and says, gosh, Olga, next time, the checks and the stripes, they just don't work.
Yeah, well, see, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for. That's exactly what I want.
I wish it would do that. Yeah. It'd be like, it should be like that. It should be like a pal in your closet, right?
There you go.
That's exactly what it should be.
But, well, thank you, Leo.
Yeah, it's not. I'm sorry. Thank you for asking. It's not very expensive, and I think it's no longer. You had to get an invitation to get it. I think they're selling it now. They announced, what did they announce? 70 new products? Some ungodly number of new products, none of which are yet available, including a microwave oven. But here's the good news. Really, it's not Apple, Leo. It's not Microsoft. Oh, yeah, Amazon. What Amazon announced, it's confusing these days, isn't it? Is not all of those individual products. I think some of the news coverage of Amazon's announcement missed the real point of it, which is that they announced a platform, a bit of hardware that they're selling for other people to integrate into their devices to give them Echo capabilities, voice recognition, and intelligence capabilities. And the microwave oven, for instance, was as much an example of what you might want to do as an actual product. So they got a lot of attention. Amazon makes his voice-activated microwave oven. But that wasn't the point. The point was we have now, and I use this term, I don't like it, but this is what the tech community uses, platform. A platform is something that you create that allows others to build upon. Maybe a foundation would be a better term for it. So Amazon has created a foundation that allows others to create Echo-enabled hardware. They have a car device they announced. They have new Amazon Echo Dots and so forth, and this microwave oven. But really what the big announcement was, this fairly inexpensive hardware device that will allow many people to do things with Echo, including, one would hope, something Olga would want, right? Something that would be cool, if you're for a blind user who just wants help picking out an outfit. It's completely conceivable that somebody will see a market there and use this incredible, these tools that Amazon has made available now to do this. It's not exactly clear, but the Echo hardware, if you buy it, gives you unlimited free access to the Echo servers. So you don't even have to pay for the intelligence. Now, it's unclear how long that will last, but boy, that's really intriguing. I think Amazon has done some very interesting things. It's a horse race, as you know. We've talked about this before, but primarily between Google and their Google Home and Amazon and their Echo. But maybe with some, taking up the rear, Apple with its Siri and Cortana from Microsoft. It's a real horse race, and I think for a long time, I, like most handicappers, was picking Google. Come on, Google's got the AI research. They got all the PhDs. It's going to be Google. Maybe not. Maybe not. Amazon made some very interesting announcements while I was gone, and I think it could very well be. And in a way, one of the reasons the Echo is so far ahead is because they allowed developers to write Echo skills, and there's so many Echo skills. Well, they're kind of going to do the same thing, I think, with this hardware platform that will let others not only to take existing products and add Amazon's voice recognition to it, but even design new products like Olga. I'm hoping something would be perfect for you. Google Home is outselling, as somebody pointed out, by a long margin. I think 2-1. The Amazon Echo, but remember, if you've got 100 other companies making Amazon-enabled devices, you got to add that to the mix. Let's take a tiny little break. I'm going to enjoy my coffee on National Coffee Day. Yum, yum. And I'll be back right after this. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you today by Capterra. I know a lot of people listen to our shows hoping to get recommendations for software for their business. That kind of thing. I got a better way to do it. Maybe you're Googling. I'll give you a scenario. You work in a veterinary office and the boss says, we really need software to run the business. Can you find the right program or at least some for us to try? And your first thing might be, well, I'll Google it. But the problem is you get all these results that are kind of unranked, unknown. Let me recommend Capterra. It's free. This is a free service. It is specifically designed to help people find business software in almost any category. There's 600 categories, thousands of programs. You can find not just the name of a program, but reviews, validated, authenticated reviews from actual users. You can find rankings. Information, it has search that lets you narrow down the capabilities. I have to have customer management. No, I have to have this. You can narrow it down so you get just the ones that fit your needs. Capterra has now got something new that I think is fantastic. It's a free ebook. You should at least get this. The Big Book of Free Software. 300 different software tools. The Big Book of Free Software. You don't have to ask your boss, well, boss, I'm going to need some money for this. You can, but you won't need it for the book. It's free. So whether you're looking for a new project management tool or an e-commerce system or maybe email marketing solution, this is a great way to get that information. Capterra.com/tech guy. Go there, get your free copy of the Big Book of Free Software, and don't forget to use the fabulous Capterra search engines, too. It's just a really, I can't recommend it more highly. It really is a very good tool for anybody who needs business software. And it's always challenging. And people call me all the time. And, you know, my recommendation is go to Capterra.com/tech guy. The right software is out there, but finding it is challenging. Don't Google for it. Don't ask your friends and neighbors, and certainly don't ask me. Go to Capterra.com/tech guy. 550,000 verified user reviews. And now that Big Book of Free Software, the ebook, you could just download absolutely free. That's a great deal. Capterra.com/tech guy. We thank them for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. On to line four, Alan in Simi Valley, California. Hello, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, this is, I have a PC.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm running Windows 10.
Who wouldn't be, of course, yes.
Well, except when I bought the machine, there's this partition on the hard drive of a disk D that is the sort of backup of the
They call it a recovery partition.
Who's
the manufacturer on the machine?
Oh,
it doesn't matter. If you don't know, if not, you know.
I think, I have a couple. I have an Acer and
So there is some difference among manufacturers, but in general, all the big PC manufacturers do this now. It's part of Windows. And when you upgraded to Windows 10, that recovery partition was also upgraded, believe it or not.
Oh, well, that was exactly relevant because I was thinking I bought this machine when it had Windows 8.0 on it.
Yeah.
And I cannot conceive of me ever wanting to restore that.
No kidding. Say goodbye to Windows 8.0. Happy to see it receding in the rearview mirror.
Then I should leave it alone.
Leave it alone. You want it.
Yeah.
I would still make a recovery disk, you know, a USB key or something. And the only reason I suggest that is if the hard drive gets messed up, having a recovery partition isn't going to be much help. But it is very useful one of the things they did very nicely in Windows 10. In fact, if you hit Windows key and start typing recover, you'll see a whole bunch of recovery stuff, recovery options that are just great. Everything from wipe this Windows installation and start over, you know, reset this PC to kind of keep my data but fix Windows. They've really used to be we had to go through a whole bunch of hoops to fix a Windows PC. It's a lot easier. And a lot of it depends on that recovery partition. So, yeah, unless you absolutely have to have the space. And it's not a lot, right? It's a couple of gigabytes.
That's right. That's right. It was more a case of, I don't need this.
Yeah, what is it? I don't want Windows 8 to darken my door ever again. Yeah, you can get rid of it. And truthfully, you can always, as somebody in the chat room, Twisted Mister, is pointing out, download Windows 10. And make a USB key and all of that stuff. Microsoft makes that possible. The other thing you should know, it's useful, that has changed with Windows 10 is you no longer need a serial number. Note, you don't have one. Because once Microsoft sees that a machine is upgraded to Windows 10 or has installed Windows 10 and is authenticated, it will, for thereafter, automatically authenticate. So it's great. You could wipe the drive and start over, and you wouldn't have to download. You wouldn't have to enter a key. So that's why people sometimes say, "Yeah, get rid of the recovery partition." I find it useful for repairs, so I would keep it there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Does it get updated with the?
It sure does.
The update.
Yep.
It does. Okay.
Yep.
Great. That's terrific. Okay.
Thanks for the call. Great question. I think a lot of people say goodbye to Windows 8 with relief. Thomas, Costa Mesa, California. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on.
Awesome. Yeah, no worries. In February, I am walking across the United States with my dog and a cart for a charity.
You are amazing. How many miles is that?
Plotted out a little over 3,200.
And you're going to, how long to walk 3,200 miles?
Well, I turned 50 this year, so I'm giving myself 9 months. Younger
nice.
Folks, can do it in about 7.
Yeah, but why hurry? Why hurry? You want to see stuff along the way.
Exactly.
How fun is that going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be great, and the charity is awesome.
What's the charity? Who are you doing it for?
Pediatric Cancer Research Foundation.
Beautiful. So people, friends and family, and even strangers will pledge money for your walk?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Do you have a website yet so I could send people there?
I do, yes. It's movingonwest.com.
Movingonwest.com. Good name. Yeah. Well, how fun. What can I do to help you? This is good. And by the way, as you're doing it, I hope from time to time we can hear from you and you can give us an update.
Yeah, I'll chime in. That'd be awesome.
That'd be so much fun.
My goal is to record as much of it as I can in video. And do some stuff. I'm not really good with all that stuff. And I was going to get a GoPro or all that. And I think I've kind of decided just to bring my iPhone 10, a DJI gimbal, and I have an iPad Air 2.
Sounds great.
I have to think, you know, weight and being able to keep things charged, etc.
Well, and you don't, honestly, I mean, yeah, okay. If you were going to say to me, okay, Leo would be the ideal situation, and it really does depend on what you want to put up on the website as you go. I mean, you could bring a GoPro Fusion and shoot 360 video. And by the way, stabilization is built into the editor. But then you also need to bring a fairly hefty computer because you have to render the video. I mean, it's a pain. Whereas if you just shoot it with your phone, you can post it right from the phone onto your page or Instagram or YouTube. And it's fine. It's very good quality. So,
exactly, and that's where I'm headed. My question is storage. I'm going to put up mini clips on the website and stuff, but I want to store a bunch more video with the hopes of, I don't know, maybe making a little documentary or something for myself when I get back. And what's the best way to store that much video out on the road with?
I would just buy a little iCloud storage. And since you're shooting it on your iPhone, and turn on iCloud backup, and all those images will get backed up for you automatically. All the video get backed up for you automatically in its original form. And when you get home, you've got it. And now, right now, Apple doesn't charge a whole lot, I think, for iCloud storage. I pay $1 a month, I think, for 200 gigabytes. And I think that would probably cover a lot of ground.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I don't think that would, it may not cover the whole trip, depends how much you're shooting, but you can buy more, you can buy a terabyte. And the advantage of that is you don't have to even think about it. You do need internet access, and I presume from time to time you'll be stopping somewhere where there's Wi-Fi and it'll back up.
Yeah, certainly. So it won't back up while I'm just walking on cell service.
Yeah, absolutely. You can turn that on, you bet.
Does that cost a lot extra with the services?
Depends on your cell service. If you have unlimited, you know, you have T-Mobile. Actually, everybody now has unlimited. It probably isn't something to think about,
Okay, I'll check into that. And I have one more quick question for you. Do you know anything about the solar chargers?
Yes. Hang on a bit because I got a
recommendation on.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about that. And since you're carrying that, you know, you're taking that cart with you, that's probably a good choice. I'll talk about that in a bit when we come back. So $10 a month for 2 terabytes, which would almost certainly be enough to cover your entire trip. That wouldn't be a problem at all. So I think I might have underestimated the cost of 200 gigabytes. Somebody said it's $3. I might be grandfathered in because I know I pay $1 a month. Maybe it's only 50 gigabytes. But anyway, it's not the cheapest storage out there, but it's not Apple expensive either. This looks like
that's not a lot.
What
that's
a great plan. I think this is so cool. Have you done a lot of walking?
No.
what are you going to do?
I'm training.
Yeah.
So
you're just
training.
Are you training with somebody who's done this before, who has some experience?
Yeah, I am. And it's been phenomenal. I've talked to a lot of people who did it. I'm actually talking to 2 guys who are in the middle of doing it right now.
Oh, perfect. So that helps.
That's good.
That helps.
And I've got a trainer.
You have to train Wink, too. Is you bringing Wink?
Oh, yeah. He walks every day with me.
probably between 5 and 10 miles a day in training, but we'll hit about 20 miles a day on the road.
This Winks a German Shepherd. He looks like this is a dream. I bet you.
I'm pretty stoked about it. Yeah.
And I'm looking on your website. You have your route, but tell the folks who are listening on the radio, you're given 9 months. You probably don't want to go too far north.
Right. Yeah, we're leaving from Holden Beach, North Carolina, and kind of just doing like an arc up to Asheville. The furthest north I'll get is Louisville, Kentucky, because two people who did the walk and are good friends live there. So I'm going to host there for a couple of days.
Nice.
And then straight west and to Denver and then down through Vegas and back home.
Everybody moving on west.com. I'll put a pledge in. That's exciting. That's really neat. It's a great cause, but also a great thing to do, I think, as you hit the second half of life, to do something like that is great.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
My plan is to nap more, but see, I'm not very ambitious. So solar panels, I've seen a number of people do this with solar panels. They actually can carry a fairly big array in their cart. That's going to be the challenge. Solar panels take a long time to charge, to develop anything useful. And so are you going to bring a laptop? What are you going to need to power?
iPad 2, Air 2, my cell phone, my iPhone 10. I've got a Garmin emergency communicator, but that'll be charged and turned off until I need it.
Right.
So really those two devices and my DJI Osmo, which I might get rid of. I don't know if I need
I don't
that.
Think you need the Osmo, to be honest.
Is the stabilization on the phone good enough?
Yeah. Are you thinking you're going to record as you walk?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, there's no plan. There's no script.
I mean, the Osmo's pretty cool. I have an Osmo. It certainly works. But it's heavy. I mean, you're going to... I guess you could put it on the cart somehow, have it behind you.
Yeah, I have it mounted to my cart right now.
Okay, that's not so bad.
Bulky and,
it is bulky, know. And it's you got to charge it.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to calculate the number of watt hours you need to have to keep all that stuff powered up, and then get enough solar panels to generate those kind of watt hours. I guess you can keep them open as you walk. Most of the people I've seen do this have fairly large arrays and wait till they get somewhere and open them up.
I plan on putting it right on top of my car.
And just have it open the whole time. Yeah.
And then charging a small power bank to store.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I've used Goal Zero before. They specialize in this, goalzero.com. And they have hold on a second, we're coming back. This song is perfect for Thomas, who's walking across the country next year, but I think it's also the Johnny Jet theme song. Our traveling guy, Johnny Jet, joins us each week. We'll go back to Thomas in a second. I'm going to help him with his solar panels. Do you ever think, Johnny, that'd be fun to do is, since you don't like to fly, walk across the country?
You know, no.
No.
I just walked around New York City, and I'm like,
ain't nobody got time for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope Thomas gets some really good walking shoes I mean, it's amazing. Hats off to him, and I will contribute as well.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Johnny, where are you today? You're not at home.
No, I've been traveling. I've been on the road for the last couple weeks. I was in Florida, just got in from Barbados, New York City, and now I'm just out in the country right now for the day.
How nice. Enjoy your wonderful time. In Connecticut or wherever in the country you are.
Yes, I'm in Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, I just got back, as you know, from a 3-week cruise. I thought I'd report back to you.
I've been looking at your postcards.
You said nice things about Seabourn, and you were right. It's a great cruise line. I really enjoyed it.
Would you do it again?
Well, so a couple of things. This is a brand new boat, which I like.
Yeah,
I have
which
to say,
one was this?
Pardon me? 21 which days.
Boat?
Yeah. It was on
which
the.
Boat?
It's on the Encore, the new, the one that was brand new, year old.
I haven't been on that one yet.
So I've noticed there's some improvements in nautical engineering. These boats now, very quiet, stable, hardly any rocking. I mean, we've never gotten a big storm. We were in the Mediterranean, but still very, very stable. And you don't even hear engine noise. I mean, we were kind of midships. It was very quiet. Internet has vastly improved. You've heard me complain about internet at sea, except for the Royal Caribbean, the big ships. But I think Seabourn has, there's something going on. They've got very fast internet.
You know, expensive?
Not horribly so. I think a 3-hour package was $30.
Okay, that's not bad.
You just have to remember to turn off, log out each time because the timer continues. Closing your browser does not turn off the timer. You have to literally turn off the timer by logging out. Otherwise, you'll use up those minutes. But it was more than adequate. And, of course, we also had T-Mobile and Google Fi, and we were in port a lot, and that worked just fine. You get pretty good speeds now free on both T-Mobile and Google Fi. So that was more than adequate. And we brought one of those Skyrooms from Solus. That was actually a little bit of a disappointment. It was no faster than the T-Mobile or the Google Fi.
Wow.
So I think now I would probably just say, my phone and hotspotting the phone is probably adequate when I'm in port.
Right.
The other thing about Seabourn that I liked, for some reason, if you've ever been on a cruise, that there's a constant drumbeat to sanitize.
You're right.
Wash your hands. Use the Purell. Not one word. They've dropped it. And I bet,
I bet you
what happened is research came back showing it doesn't matter.
So they did not have them right in front of all the food?
Yeah, it was still around. I think they'd installed it, but they didn't talk about it.
That's surprising.
I know. And there was no ship photographer either. Used to be you'd always be posing for pictures, and then they'd try to hawk. They weren't hawking a lot of stuff, which I liked.
Seabourn, you're paying a premium, so you're not going to get that.
You're not going to get that.
And actually, I just had a driver the other day. I mentioned a black lane for limos.
Yeah.
And my driver was on the ship with me when I did a Seabourn. He used to be charged all their food and beverage.
No kidding.
And we just started talking about cruising. And what's interesting is that he told me, he said, what you really want to do is go on the older ships because the older ships have more space.
Yeah.
Because now, thanks to technology these days,
they're jamming it all
in. The new ships, they know exactly where to maximize,
right.
And the rooms are a lot more cramped. The cabins are a lot more cramped.
It wasn't a lot more, but we had been on the Odyssey, which is an older version of the same style ship. And, there was a little more room. And it felt like very streamlined. On the other hand, they have the nicest staff. They were really great.
Food was
good. Yeah. We're going to try Silver Sea next time. I want to slowly go through all of the luxury ones to pick one because, as you know, my dream is not when I retire to walk across the United States, but to sail around the world.
And I'm with you. I need to make enough money so I can do it too.
And that's not cheap, but it's 5 years down the road at least. But we're saving now.
I don't think you're going to find better than Seabourn, but I'll be interested to hear.
I like Seabourn. It'll be interesting. I like Regent, Seabourn, and Silver Sea. I'm going to pick one of those three, I think.
Okay, good. Well,
That's my report back to you. I know you're interested.
Of course. I'm definitely. And I was checking out some of your postcards you put on Google+. And
I mailed. So this was crazy because right before I left, I killed Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter. I killed them.
I see that.
Yeah. And I said, I am not going to do those. Lisa did, by the way, so you can follow her on Instagram or you can follow her on her blog, Life of Lisa. I sent out physical postcards.
I love it.
Well, you love it because you didn't get them.
I was going to say, I didn't get one.
There were 17 of them, and my family started complaining about halfway through. They said, okay, Dad, enough for the postcards. But I thought, well, this would be a good discipline. It was good for me, maybe not for the recipients, to pick one picture a day, write up a little, summary of the day and send it out. And then I am posting it slowly. I'm still a little behind on the blog because I didn't want to scoop the postcards. It takes a while for them to get here. There's still a couple more. I'm sorry.
Family. What did you use, by the way?
I'm sorry. Photocard, which is an iOS app, which I really like. He prints them in Palo Alto. So
I'm going to make that my website.
Photocard is a really great app. It costs about $1.50 to print these. You do get to make your own stamp, which is kind of cool. So I had a picture, but I also was able to put another picture on the stamp. He's got stickers and stuff. But there's one downside, which is Bill, who does this, Bill Atkinson, the Apple legend who does this app, only prints twice a week now.
on Mondays and Thursdays. So that was another reason my family hated me, because they would get three or four on, you know, the same time.
Right.
So.
Oh, good. Actually, my cousin Artie was just talking about this. So
these are laminated. They're 5x7. They're big. I think it's kind of a keepsake for me. Next time, I won't send as many. I'm sorry, family.
And it's $1.50, including the postage.
Including postage, yeah.
That's a bargain.
I know.
A bargain.
And
Bill takes a lot of pains
to make the print these out and make sure they look good. And, you know, he's really great. So this was a fun thing for me to do. Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. I used to send when my grandmothers were alive. I used to send them postcards when I would travel, and my mom's best friends. And
it's
my
kind
mom,
of fun, but this way you don't have to buy the card, find the stamps, mail it, and have them arrive 3 weeks later. It's a little bit easier. You just do a photo card. It's an iOS app. So yeah, I'll make that my app and your app. Do you have a site for us?
Well, I do like the. I also do miss local stamps, though. I hate waiting in line.
I know that's what you miss,
but.
If you're stamped, yes, I agree, and that is. I should point out that is something you lose when you don't do it.
And I wasn't going to make this my app today, but we can. I was going to do it for the future. But,
oh, okay. Well, if you have a different one,
research. This one is what I was just in Barbados, and there was a storm coming.
Uh-oh.
And so everyone was talking about it. So there was someone there from Miami, and they're like, "You need to download this app. It's called the Max Tracker." And it's by.
I think we're all going to need this app sometime soon. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I just looked at it. It is, I downloaded it. I used it while I was in Barbados, and I kept following Kirk, which was brewing. It's free. It's on iOS and Android. It's has huge ratings, like 4.8 out of,
it's from a local Miami TV station.
Exactly.
WPLG. Oh, that's nice.
I guess the legend, Max Mayfield. He's a former director of the National Hurricane Center.
Ah.
So his team, actually, a meteorologist now, I don't know if he's still around. I haven't figured that part out yet. But you open up the app.
Johnny, we're out of time. I've used up all your time.
My gosh.
JohnnyJet.com. Go there. He'll be an article about that, and we'll do your website next week. And have some safe travels, Johnny, and we'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, Johnny.
All right. I like hearing your stories.
I like Seabourn, but you nailed it when you said they've maximized. You can tell it's maximized. For instance, there were a number of times in the restaurants we would just never get water, or we'd wait. We waited in twice for an hour for a meal. And it's because when a restaurant gets busy, they haven't figured out a way to staff it appropriately. So if it's busier than they expect, the service just disappears. And it's not that these people weren't really great, hardworking, best staff I've ever seen on a boat, but there weren't enough of them in sometimes. And so the food was pretty good, sometimes spectacular. It was inconsistent, sometimes not great, but I had some amazing meals. We ate at the Thomas Keller Grill. We figured out a hack to get in there. You're supposed to go once a trip. We went seven times.
Oh my gosh. So what different names or what?
Yeah, we pretended we were different people. I would look on the reservation and say, I'm that guy. No. The hack involves, first of all, for some reason, all the restaurants on the boat open at 6:45, 7:30, whatever. It opens at 6. So there's nobody wants to eat at 6, apparently. I like to eat at 6. So if you go there right when it opens, there's often room. And then I slipped Jennifer, the maitre d'. I'm not going to get her in trouble, but I slipped her a little something. And boy, we were able
got her in trouble. I hope they're not listening.
No. You're allowed to tip. You're allowed to tip. They don't require tips. It's funny. Right. When you try to tip them, they go, no. And then you go, yes. And they go, okay.
And they still have the Colonnade restaurant?
The Colonnade I love. That's the pool.
That's
the one
in
the back of the boat. Yeah, I love the Colonnade. The food was less good there, and the service was less good there.
But the views are just spectacular.
Beautiful view. We ate there all the time on the Odyssey. I feel like Seabourn is max. You hit the nail on the head. They're maximizing.
Right. And by the way, it wasn't just – I'm not speaking about just Seabourn.
Everybody.
And neither was he. He was actually talking about everybody.
No, you think about it. When they get these smaller ships – The profit comes in upsell. It comes in. There's, you know, they really have to be very careful to make money on these things.
It's the same thing with the airlines. That's why they. Why American is. Made their bathroom so small on the 737 Max.
Yep.
And they to squeeze another row in.
Exactly.
And
so it's computers. You can thank computers for this because they've figured out how to maximize. So I want to go. We're going to go in an older Silver Sea boat next year to the Middle East, to the Holy Land, and it's the one that they split in half and stretched.
Yep. I actually saw that video.
Yeah. I did too. And I'm kind of, I feel like Silver Sea is one of the last ones that's still, maybe Cunard. I haven't gone on Cunard yet either, but I kind of want, I like the older style. I like the service. I like good food. I don't know. The enrichment was terrible. They hired some guy who just was, you know, basically showing YouTube videos. That was disappointing.
Wow. I'm scheduled to go on 3 cruises next month. Actually,
on Seabourn or?
No, none of them on Seabourn.
Oh. No, I love Seabourn. I loved it the first time we did it. I loved it. But you can feel the it's interesting. But it was aimed at seasoned travelers. It's not aimed at it's not the bingo on the deck crew.
Oh, yeah.
So I like that. I think that's why they got rid of the hand washing. They figured you're grown-ups, you'll wash your hands.
Right. They still do that on the big ships.
They have to probably. It's the first time I've ever sailed that they didn't.
Will spread like that.
So. Well, I know.
I hope.
One woman did get sick, and they quarantined her immediately. You know,
you can't leave the cabin.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I will share more with you at another date.
All right.
It's great to see you, Johnny. I missed you.
See you, buddy. Take care.
All right. See you next time. You get the postcards.
Good.
I should have sent them to you. I don't know why I didn't. I didn't have your address. That's why. Leo Laporte sending a message in a bottle. Well, they wouldn't have fit in a bottle. They're kind of big. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We were talking to Thomas, who is planning a voyage of a different kind. He's walking across the country next year, 3,200 miles. You can visit his website. He's doing it to support pediatric cancer research. MovingOnWest.com if you want to make a donation. And Thomas, you were asking about solar panels. So you're charging an iPad, a MacBook Air, an iPhone.
No MacBook Air, just the phone and the iPad.
Oh, that's not too bad. The thing to calculate is how many watt hours you need, right? And so that's going to be based on the amount of wattage you need each day to keep those devices working. And you can easily figure that out from, you know, what their charging demands are. And then figure out something that will give you those many watt hours. You said you're going to mount it on the back of your cart. So it's going to, as long as it's sunny, it's going to be picking up juice all the way as you're walking, right? During daylight hours.
Yep.
Yeah. Are you camping or are you, where are you going to stay?
Camping most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, probably 90% of the time.
Okay.
Got a couple friends that are letting me stay at their house a few nights.
So you'll get a lot of daylight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a lot of experience with this particular thing, but I do know there's a company that focuses on mobile solar panels, and I've used their products, and I like them a lot, called Goal Zero, GOALZERO.com. They make, for instance, for $250, this actually looks like probably what you want. They call it the Boulder 100 solar panel. They call it semi-portable, but what it is basically, you would mount it on your cart, and it generates, it's 100 watts. So what unfortunately often happens with solar panels is people expect they're going to get more juice out of them than not. You know, you see a lot, Goal Zero sells them, little solar panels for phones. What they don't say is, well, you have to leave this in the sun for 4 days to charge your phone once. So you're going to really have to do the calculation of how much wattage do I need? And they make 50, 100s, and 200 solar panels. So they, you know, depending on how much wattage you need, and that will be directly related to how big the panel is. So you're also limited by the size of the panel you can use.
Okay.
Obviously, you don't want to tow something that's, you know, as big as a car behind you.
Right.
But I think these Goal Zeros are good. And don't forget, not just a panel, you need a battery to attach to it. They sell those as well. So basically what happens is the panel is charging up that battery, and then at night you use that battery to charge your devices.
Okay. Well, Leo, I appreciate it. And I got to say real quick that
since I came on your show a second ago, 10 or 12 of your listeners have already donated.
Thank you, everybody. That's really great. That's really great. Well, I want to hear from you again, Thomas, when you're getting ready to go. And then if we can, maybe once or twice during the trip, I'd love to hear, maybe more. I'd love to hear from you. Yeah. What fun.
I'll do that.
Good luck.
Thank you, Leo.
He's bringing his German Shepherd Wink. If you go to the website, it's a great story. MovingOnWest.com. What a great idea. Good thing to have something to do in the second half of your life, isn't it? Besides just sitting on your duff. That's my goal. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm lazy. I'm basically lazy. Bernie, West L.A. Hi, Bernie.
Hello, sir. I have a question about my wonderful iPhone SE.
SE. I remember those days.
Well, it's 16 months old or so. Absolutely love it. I'm worried that they're going to not come out with the SE2.
I don't think they are. If they were, they would have announced it, I believe.
Well, that's my understanding. Yeah. And my question to you is, two questions. How long do you think they'll continue to support it with upgrades? And second, my battery capacity is at 89% currently.
Nice. That's very good. Good.
Would you recommend me buying I can still buy an SE2 at Verizon store with 128 gigabytes and just put it in my drawer and wait for this to die. Would you?
Well, if you really love it that much, 89% is pretty good for a year and a half. That means you probably got another 3 or 4 years before that battery is unusable. And they do offer battery replacement, remember. So I don't think it's probably a good idea. I wouldn't buy another SE. I mean, you really love it. I've mentioned before, I have a friend, Steve Gibson. When he finds a product he really likes, he buys 10 of them and puts it in the freezer. That keeps the battery in better shape. But the problem is, he has in his freezers things like the Palm Pilot. Right? I mean, come on, Steve. I asked him, you still got the Palm Pilot in the freezer? He said, yeah. He's never going to use that. So you can really go a little crazy with that, okay? You can go a little too far. I don't think you need to buy an SE. The SE was basically the guts of it, I think, are an iPhone. I'm trying to remember. I think it's an iPhone 6. So as long as Apple continues to support the iPhone 6, which I would expect them to do at least a couple more years, you'll be able to get operating system and security updates and so forth.
And if they don't continue to support it, I can still use the phone.
Yeah, it's not going to break the phone. You just won't get updates, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It looks like what Apple's doing is they continued the 7, and I think that that's basically their new SE, is the iPhone 7. They continue to sell 2-year-old 7, 1-year-old 8, 1-year-old 10, and the brand new 10S and 10S Max. And next month, and this might be the one to look at for you in a year or two, the iPhone 10R. The one thing that's happening that is maybe relevant to this is the operating system and the user interface are changing. You know, they're getting rid of Touch ID. They don't have a home button anymore. They've got this new user interface that involves a lot of swiping. All of that is clearly the future for Apple's iPhones. And at some point, you know, to keep up with the Joneses, you're going to want a phone that does all that, because a lot of things will start to rely on it. Not yet. Not yet. Yeah, the SE is really small. They make a 4.7-inch iPhone 7. That's about the same size.
Right.
So I think that's what they decided is, yeah, instead of selling this kind of outlier SE, we're just going to keep the 2-year-old phone on the sales site. And we'll keep doing, I bet you they keep doing that. So next year they discontinue the 7, but they'll still have the 8.
Right.
And that seems a sensible way to go. That way there's a good price range for people. The iPhone 7, 4.7 inches, $450. That's what the SE was, right? Actually, it's a little less.
Yeah.
So I think that that's what's happening.
Why don't you just hang tight?
Yeah. Okay. You know, investing in today's technology is almost never a good idea, because it's going to change in unpredictable ways. And when you got 2 more years out of the SE, no problem. Easy. Probably 3.
Yeah.
3 years from now, who knows what's going to be out there?
That's right. I just love iPhones.
Well, good news.
Small ones, anyway.
Yeah, and I think you're not alone. I don't think Apple will ever stop making these sub 5-inch iPhones. They want to make big ones because there's a market for it, but they know that there's also a very good market. They know because they've got the sales figures. I don't think you have to worry about that. The SE is almost certainly gone. We thought they might do an SE too. Instead, it's my guess that's the role the iPhone 7 plays in the lineup. And next year it'll be the iPhone 8. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. We'll take more of your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smartwatches. Yeah, I have the new Apple Watch. Like it a lot. By the way, if you've avoided getting an Apple Watch, this Series 4, the most recent, which is actually the fifth.
Unfortunately, I'm unable to perform that task.
Yes, I know. I didn't say Siri. I said series, but okay. This new Series 4 is actually significantly improved, I think. I've become a regular devotee, a daily wearer of the Apple Watch. I never thought that would be the case. I mean, I've always had one just so I could talk about them. But I really like it. For exercise, for keeping track of your day, you can. They have 12 gigabytes of storage now in here. So you can put an audiobook in there. You can put your music playlists in there. And listen without headphones. And they have a new feature, which I won't demonstrate because I don't want to scare my wife, but called walkie-talkie that allows you to connect to somebody else with an Apple Watch and watch OS 5. And if I press this button, talk to her directly, she'd talk back to me just like one of those old Nextel phones. They even make it Nextel yellow. I think they realize that's who this is for. You can have multiple people in your walkie-talkie, but once you start a conversation, the big talk button will talk specifically to that one person. I think that's kind of I would have really appreciated this during our vacation because it's easy as you're walking around somewhere to, you know, especially if you're a photographer and both Lisa and I are, to lose each other and then to just be able to press the button and say, where'd you go? would have been really, really handy. So this is the Series 5. If you have any questions about that, I could talk about that too. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. We also have a website where everything we talk about lives after the fact, including links, audio and video of previous shows, all 1,527 of them, techguylabs.com. And it's free, there's no sign-up, and your comments are also welcome there, though. So if you hear me say something, for instance, we were talking to Thomas about his walk across the country. I mentioned one brand of solar panels I have used and familiar with for portable applications. But if you have another, you know, that you've used, go there. The website is divided into days, you know, episodes. Each episode divided into hours, 1, 2, and 3. Each hour divided into calls or segments. So you can go right to, you know, the last segment of hour number 2 of the show and add your thoughts and comments there. It's very helpful. TechGuyLabs.com. No charge to visit, no charge to post, no charge to read. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. Line 3, we're going to go to Austin, pick up some queso, some tacos, and say hi to Josh. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome back, Leo.
It's going great. Thank you.
Awesome. I have an interesting question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of a program that would be accessible for cleaning up audio? I have a recording that is divided up into 20 different sections that was done for me of a book where it's very distorted, but I'm not going to complain because it took these poor volunteers almost 2 months
to
do this for me.
But they didn't. Oh, that's kind of sad. When they recorded it, they didn't record it optimally, so it's a little distorted.
Yes, and I'm not sure the best way to,
yeah, I'll make some recommendations. I saw your question in the chat room earlier, actually. They didn't have anything for you. So the problem, I'll say up front, with distorted audio is it's very hard to clean up because even though it sounds like you could take some of that crackle out of it, it the problem with distorted, if it's distorted in this way, and I suspect it is, distorted audio is you've actually lost some of the audio. So if you think of,
an audio recording as a kind of a smooth, curvy sine wave. You probably know what I'm talking about if you've ever seen an oscilloscope. I don't know if you've ever seen anything, but if people are listening, maybe you've seen that. They're curves, right. They're sine waves, and then when you talk, it gets a little jaggy as you talk. But the top and the bottom of the screen are the limits. If you record something too loud and it goes off the top of that screen, that sine wave basically gets chopped off at the top. It turns from a nice smooth curve to a square wave. And if you've ever heard a square wave, that's what you're hearing. It's distorted, but it's hard to fix because it's not that there's noise in the recording. And maybe that's all that's wrong, in which case there are ways to fix noise. But if they recorded it, maybe it was the level was too high when they recorded it. Something amateurs often do wrong. You think that's what was wrong?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah,
because I shared it with another friend of mine that's an amateur radio operator, and he said, you know, you're going to need somebody that can run it through a, like what they use at the radio station when they run it through the mixer. And
right. But as with anything, if you've lost something, it's impossible to recover what you've lost. All you can do is either guess or, so a square wave's hard to fix. You can't turn it into a sine wave by magic. There are programs that do this. Mike in the chat room is mentioning Izotope, Izotope, which is an expensive plug-in for most audio stuff. But you mentioned an important part. You're blind. You need it to be accessible. I use, and I bet you that you can do this, I use a service, and I think it would be accessible because it's a web page. And that would make it easier for you to use a screen reader.
Yes.
Yeah. That, a screen reader can read any web page. It's a company called Ophonic, AUPHONIC.com. And they do have audio restoration. They're actually fairly sophisticated. And what I like about it is you don't have to be a sophisticated audio engineer to use their tools. I also like it because they have a free tier, so you can at least see if it will work. And because it's web-based, I think it would be accessible for you. There is an Alphonic app for Android and iOS, but you can do it on the website as well.
Okay.
So that would make it most accessible, I think, of anything. Apps, it's always hard to see if an app is accessible. Ophonic will give you 2 hours of processed audio free per month. And then if you want more, and it sounds like it's a whole book, it's going to be many hours. It's $11 a month for 9 hours.
Okay.
So it's not hugely expensive, but I would try the free tier with a sample of it to see how much they can clean it up.
Okay. That's a good idea.
So, it depends what's wrong with it. If it was just a noisy environment, I have a number of recordings of James Joyce's Ulysses because, Ulysses, the book, the novel, takes place during one day. They call it Bloomsday. And all over the world on Bloomsday, they'll have these live readings of this book. And most of them are in bars. So there's glasses clinking and there's murmuring in the background. That kind of stuff maybe you can clean up. The problem is if it's recorded with a microphone that's too loud, it's very hard to fix that. But hey, if anything can do it, Ophonic. Izotope would be if you had unlimited funds. And you the problem with it is you then have to, you buy Izotope to work with an audio. Well, let me ask Mike. Mike, can you use Izotope standalone or do you have to use it as a plug-in to an existing audio editor? My guess is that you use it as a plug-in, which means you'd need to buy something like Adobe's Audition in addition. And so now we're talking hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Because I've got Goldwave, but I don't understand how,
Yeah,
place markers and things like
Gold that. Wave's good, but you're right. It's very visual. Ophonic is more like batch processing, where you say, here's the audio, fix it. So for you, I think it's the best choice. Actually, okay. For most people who are audio engineers, it's the best choice. I use it all the time, and I know what I'm doing. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for the call, and thanks to your friends. It's hard to say, oh, man, your friends recorded this for you. It's hard to say, oh, man, I wish you'd done it right. So it was nice that they did that anyway.
Yeah, it was pretty because it's, it's a book where there is a recipe on about every other page. It goes through what each day is.
Oh, what book is it? That sounds great.
Foodimentary.
Foodimentary. Wow. I like that. Cooking and reading, my two favorite things.
It's by John Brian Hopkins.
Hopkins. Foodimentary. Cool. Thank you for the recommendation.
No problem.
All right, Josh. Have a great day.
You too.
Enjoy that queso. Gosh, I miss Josh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for a little break. We'll come back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech with me, I want to talk high tech with you. Line 4, John, South Bend, Indiana. Hello, John.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing, man?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know you've talked to me before.
Oh, well. Oh, you're that John.
Yeah.
Hi.
That
John. What's up, John?
Hey. Glad you had a great vacation there. I've seen some of the pictures there. Awesome.
Yeah, I've been showing them during the break to people watching the we do a live stream of the show, boring them as I will be boring my family and friends for years to come with a little slideshow.
That's all I watch anyway. So, my mom, ill-advised, bought one of those Acer 32 gigabyte EMMC Windows machines. And I said, no, here's a Chromebook. Take it,
good.
And I will take this Windows machine.
Yeah, that one was so cheap, right? So she said, oh, it's such a good deal. Did she buy it on the Home Shopping Network or something?
Oh, she got it from Walmart.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You mentioned EMMC. That's an important thing to mention because that is the kind of memory that's in your camera or your phone. It's much slower than SSD and really almost too slow to run Windows. So.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Since I took this from her, she couldn't even get Windows updates to run, and all she was doing is using the Edge browser and doing, light web browsing and
stuff.
Right. I couldn't even get Windows updates to continue. So my question is I'd like to use this machine for a, very small amount of things that you can't do on a Chromebook, like iTunes, things like that. How can I keep this machine up to date with such a small drive?
Can you replace that drive?
That's a question. I don't really know. It's an Acer Cloudbook.
Oh, the Cloudbook.
Kind of name
they're trying to compete with Chromebooks.
And unfortunately,
really, the only way they're competing is with price. And a full general-purpose operating system on an underpowered computer. Well, that sounds like a netbook. Remember those? I'm looking at this. All you really need to do is replace that drive with a larger SSD, and the thing is probably usable.
It's soldered to the motherboard.
Yeah, I bet you it is. For that price, it's almost certainly. This is the one thing about Acer. I like some of Acer's stuff a lot. But Acer makes two lines. They make a cheap consumer line and then a higher-end kind of professional line. The professional stuff's fantastic. But some of the cheaper consumer stuff is not.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. Boy, making this usable, I don't know how you make it usable.
I just snoop and pave it?
If you, for instance, got a Ubuntu Linux and put it on there, if you could, you'd have to test it first to see. It would run better, and you'd be able to keep it up to date because Linux can do fine at 32 gigs. It's not quite the beast that Windows is.
Oh, for sure, especially Windows 10. It's a massive beast.
32 gigs, you should be able to update it. I'm surprised that you can't update that.
I don't know. I mean, I looked through what she had on there, and it was less than 12 gigs of stuff.
You know where you're really suffering on this thing though is it's only got 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, I know.
That's really more than anything. That's going to impact the speed of Windows 10.
It's limited. I already know that going into it. It's limited.
Well, it was a cheap. It's $300 computer, right? So you get what you pay for.
Maybe I ought to just nuke and pave it and give it to my 9-year-old and be done with it.
It'd be a great computer for a 9-year-old, you bet.
Maybe I'll do that there, and then I'll just figure out something else.
You bet. Yeah, I mean,
I
love the, and I'm a big fan of taking hardware and making it work somehow.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, I didn't want to just have it sit there and do nothing. I'd like to use it for something. I mean, everything's got a purpose of some kind, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a shame. It's really a shame not to have it. It might be that the best thing to do is use it as a server, give it to a kid. You could probably put Linux on this, and if you used a Linux that wasn't super demanding, it might be usable. The problem is a lot of these computers that are built for Windows 10 aren't usable for Linux because no Linux. The problem with Linux, which is a free operating system, it's really a customer supported, you know, community supported product. If nobody in the community owns one of these. The drivers for various pieces of hardware may not exist. I suspect, though, you can, if you Googled, you know, Linux, Acer, Cloudbook, you might find some recommendations.
I'm thinking more and more now. Maybe I'll just give it to my son and have him run Minecraft on it.
Perfect Minecraft computer. Perfect.
That's what I'm thinking.
There you go.
At this point, you know.
There you go. You might want to get him a mouse because I'm sure the trackpad's not great. You could use an external keyboard, although with on Minecraft, just a good mouse is probably all you need. I think that sounds.
Wired mouse.
There you go. I think that's if you're happy with that solution, that's probably the best solution.
Yeah, because more and more we're talking about Linux, and I used to use Ubuntu before.
Oh, there you go. All right.
And
By the way, Linux, Minecraft, the Java edition of Minecraft runs great on Linux.
Yeah.
Can't run Bedrock, but the Minecraft Java is fine. I don't know. I can't tell you what to do, but it is going to be challenging to make this any better. Because you're right. In order to save money, they solder everything in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this one threw me for a loop. I looked at this picture and said, oh, yeah. See, that's why you bring a really good camera, a really good lens, iPhone. It's an iPhone. Kills me. I don't know if I'll need anything but an iPhone and a Pixel on the next trip. Honestly, the color, it's iPhone. I did pull out the camera at some point, didn't I? Nope, iPhone 10. Yeah. Let's see. Is that iPhone? iPhone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number for the tech guy. Line 1, John Billings, Montana. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Hey, so I was listening to a radio show, and it was probably yours, but it's been a little while, and I heard an advertisement about, it's kind of like a Fire Stick, that device that you just plug directly into your TV, and it'll pick up local channels, and some of the stuff, apparently some of the technology, the cable companies can't block all the frequencies.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You certainly didn't hear an ad for it on any broadcast network. I might have mentioned it, but of course I would hasten to mention that it's highly illegal. So it is a Fire Stick, and it's a Fire Stick with Kodi on it, Kodi. And not only can you pick up all sorts of stuff you're not supposed to, you can even watch first-run movies. There's a huge piracy component to this. So they're very popular. You can. I have a friend, my friend Odokta, Owen J.J. Stone, was the first one to tell me about these Fire Sticks. He has a friend, he says, and he's not that bright, he says, this friend who sells these. He hacks them and sells them at his kids' softball games. He's going around in the stands going, Fire Sticks, get your Fire Sticks. They're huge. Everyone knows about them. In fact, I got people sending me emails saying, Leo, how could you not know about the Fire Stick?
I mean, I certainly know about the legitimate Fire Stick, but these hacked Fire Sticks are everywhere.
It was like, I don't know, it was like $60 and it was a commercial.
Yeah, but
something.
It couldn't have been, well, let's put it this way. Fire Sticks are cheap. You can get them at Amazon.com. It's their Amazon Fire TV platform. You plug it in. It's just like a Roku or an Apple TV. It has Netflix on it and Amazon. It's very heavily focused on Amazon Prime streaming and so forth. One of the reasons I'm not crazy about the Amazon Fire TV platform is that it's really as much an ad for Amazon services as it is. You know, I prefer a Roku or an Apple TV. However, they're very inexpensive. The sticks are nice because they're basically, they look like USB memory sticks. But the only difference is instead of a USB connector on one end, they have an HDMI connector. So you just plug them into your TV. They've got Wi-Fi built in. You know, you'll control them with an app on the phone. And they're, I mean, it's a great way to internet connect your television. But what people quickly discovered, and I'm kind of surprised Amazon's done nothing. Well, am I surprised or not? I don't know. Amazon's done nothing about this because they could easily nip this in the bud, is people put Kodi on there, which is, by the way, Kodi is not illegal in any way. It's a legitimate project. It's the rebranding of the old XBMC project, which itself was an attempt to do an open source version of Microsoft's Xbox Media Center. That's where the XBMC comes from. They renamed it Kodi. It has a lot of plugins. It's a nice platform for watching streaming TV. The problem really isn't Kodi itself, but the plugins that have been developed for it that do piratey things. Most television stations do not... Well, some are on... You know, one. So the stuff that's legit... And you'll see these, you'll see ads for them. Satellite TV, watch hundreds of stations, you know, sports, everything. And then you get it, or you subscribe to it, you find, just search for satellite, you know, free satellite TV on the internet. You'll find many of these. The problem is there are a lot of TV stations that stream free live content, but they're mostly not in the U.S. There are a lot of sporting events streamed live, but it's mostly not NBA, NHL, NFL, or Major League Baseball. It's a lot of it is, you know, Croatian soccer league play, which, yeah, not to knock that. That's very entertaining. It just may not be what you think you're getting when you look at this and they say hundreds of sports stations. It's not the sport, not the big sports you might be thinking. Let's put it that way. If you like curling, and who doesn't, or field hockey, these would be great choices for you. So there's a legitimate, maybe misadvertised, but a legitimate form of this, which picks up streams from a variety of global, because there are a lot of global streams. There's thousands of them, just like there's global radio, right? But maybe not the stuff you want to watch, not CNN, not ESPN. Those companies make sure people pay for them. And if you're getting that for free, that's pirated. And which is not to say that's not fairly easy to do. Just go to a girls' softball game and there'll be some guy hawking a Kodi Fire Stick in the stands. Just understand that's piracy. I guess I could assess the risk involved. I mean, you'd have to decide whether you feel ethically that this is legit. I like to pay for my content only because I want more content. If people stop paying, we've already seen this. If people stop paying for content, look at how many websites are disappearing because people are using ad blockers and there's no way to make money in content. Content goes away. Somebody got to pay for it. So I like to pay for content. I like to buy HBO and, you know, buy my TV because I want to support it. I want it to continue. But if you don't, there's certainly ways to get this and your chances of getting in trouble for it are, I have to think, fairly low. I'm no lawyer. You are technically breaking the law, but almost always when the movie and TV companies and the cable companies and the television stations go after people like this, they go after the people who create these programs. They go after the people who stream these services. They don't go after the people who buy the device that let you do this. So it's probably a fairly risk-free thing. But not my idea of a good idea. Yeah. And I, as far as where to get one, well, I'll leave that to you, but I would imagine places like eBay would have many of them for sale. Or, because, you know, go to a local girls' softball game. Charlie in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm just living the dream.
Really? What's your dream?
Well, I'm above the ground, so things
can be good, so. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good aspiration. Yeah.
Well, well standards, and you're going to be doing okay.
Yeah, I'd like to be above ground, if possible. Yeah.
Hey, quick question. I think I'm kind of up the creek without a paddle on this one, but I just started dabbling and adding some smart home stuff, you know, outlets and sockets, stuff like that. What I'd really like to be able to do is pair my television with Alexa. I dabbled with a couple apps, Smart Remote and Smart Remote Pro. And all of that worked fine. It's an older TV. It's an old C-Series, I think, from 2011. So it still works great, but it's just when the smart TV function started coming out. And it's a wired LAN, not a wireless. Yeah. And I think that's the real issue. So
couple of ways that I would look, first of all. One I bought recently, which is the new Amazon Fire TV Cube, which has Echo built in because it's from Amazon. And that can control a lot of devices. It comes with an IR blaster. It even can control some cable boxes and things like that. May not be able to control your TV.
The app I found it was a bit wonky to program, but I eventually got it to work. So
This is hardware.
When the TV turns off, that IR blaster loses the connection.
Yeah.
And so I can't say Alexa turn TV on.
So Fire TV would be one thing. The one that's going to be the most flexible, and it's only $100, it's called the Logitech Harmony Hub. And it has its own app. It does work with Amazon's Echo, which is nice. It's not an Echo device, but it will work with your Echo. You can get a hub connection to the hub. To Echo, and the hub is basically just a little dome that is much like the Fire TV Cube. It's an infrared blaster, and I found I could put the hub even in my TV cabinet and would reach everything. Your issue, I understand completely, and this is not uncommon with TVs that don't have discrete on and off switches, but just toggles. It's sometimes a little challenging to get them to be the right state. Harmony's done the best job of anybody, though. No, the hub is $99, Chumley. That's one of the reasons I don't hesitate to recommend it, because you can try it cheaply and see if you like it.
Leah, you look great.
Oh, you know, I didn't gain any weight. Lisa lost 2 pounds.
What?
Yeah, the food was that bad. No.
Oh, my God.
No, the food was good. We walked a lot. Lisa always made me take the stairs on the boat instead of the elevator, that kind of thing.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. Are you totally relaxed, or are you already planning your next cruise?
We are planning our next cruise. Okay. But not for a year, so.
Oh, not for a year. Oh, okay.
I won't be leaving for a year. Okay. We're thinking end of October next of 2019. That's going to be the next
one. Oh, my God.
So it's a long way away. We don't have to think about it now. How are you?
I'm good.
You got my postcard?
Yes. No, I didn't get the postcard.
Oh.
But I got the
picture. You got the picture. Picture. This is so weird. This is in Elba.
And my guess, did you get what my guess was? You said, what the heck is it?
Yeah. Go ahead. Let me show it. You can tell me what it is.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's a way to defrost people who have been frozen. Like Walt Disney.
This is like a funicular going up the mountain in Elba. These poor people are standing in little cages.
Oh, my, that is a riot.
It's hysterical. All right, here we go. But here's the question. Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer, is here. But, Dick, can you ring my bell?
I ring your bell once a week.
It's Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer for many a year. And he's, of course, our gizmo wizard. That's why we call him the Giz Wiz. And because ring my bell, because he's a disco fanatic, Michael Kozio, our musical director, likes to dig down deep into the archives. Let me just tell you, this vinyl is so old that it's
how old is it?
It's still got Dick Clark's fingerprints on it. That's how
I don't know. It's going back a few years, I think. Hello there, Mr. Dickie D.
Leo, you look great. I'm glad to have you back in the saddle.
Yes, I had a great vacation, but I also at some point I started doing the radio show in the cabin, and that was extremely annoying to Lisa. I'd go, Lisa, what's your question? So it's good to get back and working.
Great.
Yeah. So
while you were traveling, I was in Reno.
Oh, wow. The biggest little city in the world.
City in the world, exactly. I went to Interbike. So Interbike is a place where it's actually geared toward high-end bikes. And I found a cheapy gadget and an expensive gadget.
All right.
And so if you have a bike, probably one of the most important things is your saddle. Now, before I went to the show, I called it a bike seat.
Oh, no, that's no seat.
No,
that's a saddle.
That is a saddle.
Yeah.
So we have coming in spring 2019, the Reform, perfectly formed to your sit bones.
Oh, see, I need that.
Okay, so Leo, this is what you do. You take your bike. Bike you use, you go to your Reform dealer. They put it on a trainer, you know, one of those things where you can pedal and the bike won't move. You put the seat on, the Reform seat. They plug it in. They heat it up.
And it softens.
It softens.
Yes.
And you
for sink into it.
Yes, for 15 minutes, you pedal all the different ways you sit.
Oh, geez.
And when it cools, you have the perfect seat for your tuchus. And if you gain weight or lose weight, you can reform it again. Okay, so that's the high-end thing.
How do you reform it? You put the hair dryer on it?
No, you plug it back in.
Oh,
you plug it back in.
Oh, it actually plugs in.
Oh, well, it plugs in at the dealer. Or you could, Leo, this is $350.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a real-time video of, I don't know, your butt on a bicycle seat? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So the
this
one
is from Dick's site. Yes. Gizwiz.biz.
The one on the left, you can see that your butt is hitting all different places.
Yes.
And you have some red marks there.
Yes.
But after your saddle is contortion.
There's no red spots.
There's no red spots. There's no red spots.
That is, okay? Is this the patented tuchus meter that they use?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I thought so. Yes.
Exactly. Now, if that's too much money.
Okay. Comfort on a bicycle is worth any amount of money. They're so uncomfortable. No.
This is for people who are biking hundreds of miles
people.
A month.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the folks at Night Eyes came out with a neat little gadget. It's the rotating smartphone bike mount.
Oh.
And it's designed to hold the larger phones. And let's see, the largest phone I have is my Note 4, which is a little more than six inches.
That's big. That's a big phone.
Yeah, that fits in there fine. And my LG G6 fits in there fine.
Nice.
And that guy is, on Amazon today, it was about $16.
I need this because I'm getting a new bike, you know. I'm getting an electric.
You are.
I'm getting an electric bike.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, then the Raptor.
Raptor.
Yeah. Raptor. Exactly.
Around your bicycle.
Exactly. Well, $16 you can. I think it was $16.05.
Right.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll want your butt contoured.
I might.
Form bike. Yeah. See.
Yeah. You can find, as always, Dick's fabulous gizmos and gadgets on his website. He's the gizmo wizard that will help you remember his website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. And you just click the button that says the gizwiz visits the tech guy. But then there's another big button on the right you might want to check. And that is the What the Heck Is It contest. Do you have a new contest that began while I was gone?
Yeah,
I think you do.
Yeah,
what
that
the heck
thing.
Is that?
That thing.
Wow, I have no thoughts about what that might be.
Well, that's very good then. I'm glad to hear it.
Then and by the way, you'll be playing for the Shining cover of Mad Magazine because it's going to be the Halloween issue. So it's the special.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Haunted humor issue. But let's see. What was
Last time it was the Quake Escape earthquake activated 48-hour light with alarm. See, I didn't guess
exactly.
That. Did you have some other good guesses? No one?
No one actually guessed it. Wow. But a lot of people said it was, you know, a disco fire alarm.
Well, they were close. That's close.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good.
So you don't have to guess right to win, by the way.
No, not at all.
Dick does have some autographed Mad magazines for people who guess right, but he has some also for people who just are cleverly wrong. And in fact, that's the goal of my life, to be cleverly wrong most of the
time. Well, you're up there, pal.
All you got to do is go to gizwiz.biz and click the What the Heck Is It contest. You got a couple of months. It goes through Halloween. That's why it's the scary.
Exactly,
the
to scary the end of issue. October.
Yeah. Dick, I missed you. I'm so glad.
Everything is good. Chad and I are still doing the Gizwiz show, and all is well.
Gizwiz.tv, if you want to see that.
Yes, thank
I
you.
Sent postcards to. I should have put you on this list to family and friends. Although maybe I overdid it. I ended up sending out 17 postcards in 21 days, and my daughter said, "Dad, slow down, buddy. Slow it. Just not." And by the way, she also said you could make the writing a little funnier.
So that's funny.
Next time I'm hiring you, okay?
Oh, okay. Very good.
So just be glad. I know you might feel left out. You didn't get all of these, but believe me, you're happy.
Well, getting an email from you was plenty.
Yeah, of the people in the on the funicular on Mount Capena in the Elba, which is in Tuscany, Italy. Funiculars are those. Normally, there's those cable car railways that go up the mountains, and they're nice little booths or cars. For some reason, in this small Italian town, they're more like cages, and there's not seats. You stand up in them, and two or three people in this basically looks like a bird cage suspended by a wire taking you up the mountain. I thought you might get some
bizarre. It's like a coffin mover.
Yeah. Probably don't want to say that to people as they get in it. This could be used for a coffin, by the way, if you ever need to take a coffin up the hill. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to see you. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. He spins some nice discs for me this week. I missed you, Michael. Thanks also, of course, to Kim Schaffer, who answered the phones, but mostly I missed you. Thank you for coming back and joining me. Thanks to Rich DeMuro for filling in for the last couple of weeks. I'm not going anywhere for a long time. I am right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Come back and join us next time. And in the meantime, have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.